5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. I am Steven.
I am Matt.
Thank you for coming back.
You're welcome,
Matt.
I had to after listening last week.
Yes, I know.
There's a missing ingredient here.
Yeah. You tell me about it.
No, I'm kidding. You did an excellent job. I was very, very happy with the episode.
I appreciate it. Hopefully those of you out there, you heard last week for our 1982 episode, I flew solo. Mm-hmm. Matt took a well-deserved week off.
It's going through some personal stuff.
Yeah. So I took the reins. And for those of you out there that are listening who also have your own podcasts or do solo podcasts, I have the utmost respect for you. Not that I had any disrespect at all, but I definitely have a lot more respect for you because doing a podcast by yourself is hard.
Especially if there's comedic content in there.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, I personally can do comedic stuff on my own, writing wise, definitely. But I'd much rather have an audience, much rather play off of people. Yeah. And also, since doing the show, the two of us, since 2019, and just doing shows, just the two of us, 2019, I'm just so used to having somebody else here. Maybe if you start as like a solo podcaster, maybe you don't know the difference. I definitely do know the difference, and I much would rather have people here with me. So, Matt, good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Thank you very much.
Good to be back. Thank you very much.
Yes, and you're back also. It's helpful because we're kicking off Martial Arts Month.
Back by popular demand. And by popular demand, I mean we just wanted to bring it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was fun last year.
Yeah, it was. It was a good time.
Plus, it's a good play on words.
Martial Arts Month. Yes. And it kind of makes finding subjects a little easier whenever
we do themed months. Yeah.
So last year we had...
People like themed months.
Yeah, exactly. Our numbers show. Download numbers show. Mm-hmm. People tend to like themed months.
Gives you an idea of what you're getting into rather than being like, I don't know what they're going to talk about this week. Yeah. The new episode comes up and it's like, I don't know if I want to listen to that.
Yeah. 2024, we're going to try and stray away from some of the more random weeks.
Yeah.
As you can see, we've had the 80s decade retrospective episodes and the six mix with Jeff, which got rave reviews.
Oh yeah.
Rave reviews.
Yeah. It is said to be, and I'm not just making this up.
Yeah.
I was told that it was the person who told me, in their opinion, it was the best six mix we've ever done.
Yeah. So that was high praise.
And all of them have been good.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I love all
so
of them
that's
in their own
really
way.
High praise.
Exactly. Yeah. But six mixes, decade retrospectives, and themed months, we're going to try and narrow the focus with as broad a topics and as broad a spectrum as we cover. So Martial Arts Month. Back to that Martial Arts Month. We had 4 weeks last year, but how the month of March lines up this year, we're gonna have five weeks.
And this one comes out March 1st, which just feels right. It's just perfect. Yeah.
Just so perfect.
So perfect.
But tentatively, here are some of the other movies we're gonna be talking about. Rapid Fire.
Another Brandon Lee vehicle.
Exactly. Yeah. His performance.
You will hear all the Brandon Lee praise in this episode. Yes. We did an episode about The Crow years ago.
2020.
With our younger brother, Tyler, and praised him constantly in that episode, too.
Yeah. Justifiably so.
Yeah.
So after watching this film, which we're doing this week, Showdown in Little Tokyo, I was like, we need to watch his other pre-The Crow vehicle, Rapid Fire. So, Rapid Fire, tentatively, the next Karate Kid.
Hilary Swank version.
Tentatively, Kickboxer with Jean-Claude Van Damme. Mm-hmm. And then week five is open right now.
We'll see
what happens.
Yeah.
And what's also open is our DMs are always open.
Always
you
open
You can always
on
reach
Instagram.
Us on social media. Yeah. Where is that?
That social media is on the computer.
or your phone.
Or the internet. No, but our social media is at the Radcast. Cast is spelled with a K. Radcast is all one word. We don't have X. We don't have Threads or Facebook or anything like that. Maybe a Facebook would be smart.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought of that. If not, like, because eventually Matt and I are going to launch Twin Freaks Media on YouTube, which we're going to house all of our podcast episodes, the archives, and then new stuff. Eventually, this, I promise you, so says NSYNC.
Exactly.
but I think it would be smart maybe to Twin Freaks Media Facebook. But
yeah.
I don't know.
But as far
make
as... Make it so.
Yes, exactly.
As Patrick Stewart would say.
As
make it so.
Our adjacent relationship to Patrick Stewart through our pal Dan Drake.
Yeah.
Who is a very, very loose adjacent relationship.
Who he himself doesn't even have a relationship with Patrick Stewart.
He just got to talk to him for about 5 minutes.
Yes.
But you can hear us talk about that on our episode, our six mix with Dan, and then our subsequent bonus episode.
Yep, exactly.
They were wonderful.
Yes. And so you can listen to us. It's just wherever you listen to podcasts. You're listening to us now. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure this is a perfectly fine app of choice.
Yeah.
And if you so choose, wherever applicable, you can give us ratings and reviews. Mm-hmm. 5 stars helps us out.
Yes.
If you don't feel like we are 5-star worthy, you don't have to give us 5 stars. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if out of the goodness of your heart, if you could give us a review, 5 stars really helps us out.
Yes, thank you very much. Where would they, if they would like some of our new merchandise?
Ah, yes. If you go to our Instagram, we have a link to Jeff Wright, who was on our most recent Six Mix. He has done all of our designs for all of our podcasts over the years, and he has a Redbubble page. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to our Instagram, the link is in our bio for his Redbubble page. One of the designs was already taken off due to a copyright issue.
Yeah.
But that's going to happen. I managed to swipe a magnet of that design before it got, so I have a rare item.
Oh yeah,
on my refrigerator.
You and I think Jeff said one other person.
Yeah, mom probably.
I don't know.
I'd be curious. Let us know who you are.
Yeah,
out there.
It's the one that says parental advisory, maximum buffoonery.
Yeah, it got pulled because the usage of the parental advisory design. But we still have 2 other designs on there, so you can get it on mugs, magnets, stickers, shirts, hoodies.
Yeah, and we're going to come up with more designs as well. I would like to say, so we've been doing the Radcast for 4 years. We've been podcasting, the two of us, for 5 years since 2019, but the Radcast for 4 years. And in that time, we had the Sinners on Sucktastic Cinema.
I know where you're going with this.
So we never had a name for listeners or fans.
No. If anyone was a fan, that said, I just like being rad, you know?
Yeah, or Radcasters or whatever. You know, whatever. You know, it's we kind of just with a guest, mainly Tyler Strickland, would throw things out there. Hey, Radcasters, how you doing?
Yeah.
Like, that's all well and good, but for whatever reason, we never thought to come up with anything.
No.
Well, now that there's a possibility for merchandise.
We stumbled into Sinners.
Yeah, exactly.
That was an accident.
Yeah. But now that we have merchandise
that,
you know, the options are out there, the potential things you can put on, you know, shirts or whatever, I think it's high time to give the Radcast listeners and supporters a name so that
you've earned it. Congrats.
Yes, you've earned it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So we can put it on merchandise and you can have something that's almost like a seal of approval.
Yeah.
So you are our cast crew.
Cast crew.
Double K. Yes.
That didn't mean to do that.
Nope. Twin brain.
Twin magic.
But after 4 years of doing this show, non-consecutively, we finally have given our listeners and supporters a name.
What up, cast crew?
You are with us, the cast crew.
Mm-hmm.
So just saying that because we are going to be putting that design out there that can be part of merchandise.
Yep.
So thank you for joining us, cast crew.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get into this week's Martial Arts Month movie, Showdown. In Little Tokyo. So it was released August 23rd, 1991. What happened 20 days earlier?
Could it be that I was born?
Could it be that before you was born, I was born?
Man, oh man.
Woman, oh woman. August. It's August 23rd, 1991. We're two morons. That's why I wish we still had that maximum buffoonery.
Uh-huh.
That's we're just buffoons.
Yep.
Two boobs.
Yep.
As Naven Johnson would say. Directed by Mark L. Lester. Starring Dolph Lundgren as Sergeant Chris Kenner. Brandon Lee as Johnny Murata. Kirihiro Yuki Tagawa as Yoshida.
Shang Tsung from
Mortal Kombat. Yeah, Johnny Tsunami.
Johnny Tsunami's grandpa.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't play Shang Tsung and Johnny Tsunami.
Right, yeah. So he played Johnny Tsunami's Tsunami's grandpa. I apologize for those of you that can probably hear it. I've been dealing with allergy stuff the last few days and sinuses.
Steven's brain isn't working.
Yes, yeah, so... I'm in the waning stages of the allergy
like
issues.
The whining stages.
Shut up. Seasonal allergy issues. So my head is congested and it's a little hazy.
It's a little hazy. A hazy shade of winter.
Yes, exactly. Tia Carrera as Monaco. Tashishiro Obata as Sato, who
plays Tatsu in the Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
And the first two Ninja Turtles movies.
Yeah, that Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah.
Also, character actors Gerald Akamura and Al Leong. Who Al Leong, you see him in Die Hard,
yeah,
Lethal Weapon,
yeah,
Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, there's a lot
Rapid
of
Fire.
I noticed a lot of not extra, but character. I'm like,
yeah,
these guys are like, if there's like some sort of Asian villain, sort of consortium,
yeah.
or group,
yeah,
these actors are probably gonna be in here.
Oh yeah, Gerald Akamura is Hawaiian.
Yeah.
But, you know, Hawaii, whether they're Hawaiian, Chinese, Japanese, like they're gonna
the Yokozuna treatment.
Yeah, exactly. Yakuzuma.
Yeah.
A box office of $2.3 million on an $8 million budget, and that's only because Warner Brothers didn't like the final cut.
Yeah.
Even after, like, cutting it down from... And we're going to talk about... This movie's 79 minutes. It's not even an hour and 20. It's not... It's barely what could be considered a full-length feature film.
It hits the ground running and doesn't stop.
Yeah, and the thing of it is, that can actually be a charming, endearing thing, but I even texted you, I was like, this movie could stand to be about 90 to 100 minutes.
There's some character establishment stuff that there's some stuff you can be like, it's great, I can take it or leave it. There's some stuff that is kind of necessary for us to feel certain emotions towards characters.
Or to explain certain motivations or as to why certain characters are this way or that way.
But because there's plenty of exposition just through dialogue, but it's done like on the way to another action scene.
Yeah, and also to be fair, by so many accounts, Dolph Lundgren is just the sweetest, nicest guy.
Same with Brandon Lee.
Kerry Tagawa said they both were just the sweetest. And like Dolph Lundgren is like super smart.
Mm-hmm. He's a chemical engineer.
Yeah, he's a chemical engineer.
He's a member of Mensa.
Yeah, I mean, and he's...
And a badass martial artist.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing of it is, this was in the waning years of them trying to make him a leading man.
Yeah.
Ever since Rocky IV, and they tried with Masters of the Universe, they tried with
Red Scorpion,
with the Punisher. But it's just it's not so much his accent, because Arnold Schwarzenegger has an accent, but he has an accent, but he has charisma. Dolph Lundgren, not so much.
He's not. One of my first notes is Dolph Lundgren is not a good actor.
He is.
But honestly, what do you expect?
Yeah. But
he has incredible screen presence.
Yeah.
And I watched a Joe Blow video about Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Yeah.
And he said what makes these characters likable is the genuine affableness of the actual people playing them.
Oh, absolutely. Because he gave Steven Seagal as an example of how, like, the Chris Bunbury, who was doing the video, he was like, I can't enjoy Steven Seagal movies anymore, because although they're like brainless, mindless popcorn film, Steven Seagal's an asshole in real life. So
terrible person.
Horrible human being.
Yeah.
But Brandon Lee, Dolph Lundgren, the complete opposite.
Yeah.
But also what I was getting at is his accent mixed with how his ADR is done, it makes it hard to understand what he's saying sometimes.
Yeah. His delivery isn't the greatest.
Yeah. So all that to say, the original cut was in the 90 to 100 minute range, but Warner Brothers trimmed it way down, and even then they hated the final product.
Got a limited theatrical release.
Yeah, so they only released it in like 100-something theaters, and it mainly was a straight-to-video movie. So that's why it didn't make a lot of money at the box office, because I feel like it still would have at least maybe met its budget if it was released in more theaters.
Yeah.
But it just was one of those things.
It's got violence and nudity in it.
Yeah.
I guarantee you people would have gone to see it in theaters.
That's the thing. You know, it's violent, but also there's a lot of nudity.
Yeah.
So you can find it on Amazon Prime. There are physical DVD and Blu-ray releases. Yeah.
There is a free version on YouTube, but I put it on just to make sure, like before I rented it, just to make sure if I can watch it on YouTube.
Don't you own it?
I thought I did.
Mm.
Maybe I have so many DVDs that I just scan them and maybe I missed it.
Yeah.
But I feel like I do own it.
Yeah.
But anyway, don't watch it on YouTube for free. It's on YouTube to purchase, but there is a free version. Don't watch that because the way it's uploaded, it's shot real. It's like edited close in to avoid copyright and stuff like that. So it's unwatchable.
Yeah. So either way, if violence and nudity doesn't bother you, then check it out.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. It's a fine watch. But
damn, I feel like I do own it.
I feel like you do too. Either way, it's just $3.99.
Yeah.
So it's you're not out.
Not
a
breaking
ton.
The bank. Yeah.
So it didn't make a lot of money in the theater. What was on the VHS? Now the Showdown Little Tokyo VHS opening that's uploaded to YouTube is only about 1:30, and it's mainly just black screen before the FBI warning and then into the old school Warner Brothers home video that da 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 da
da da da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da There's nothing on there.
Yeah.
So without a proper VHS open on YouTube, I pulled another Tia Carrera movie. Can you guess which one maybe I pulled?
Yes. Not Wayne's World.
No, we already
did.
I mean,
we did that.
Wayne's World and Wayne's World 2 are ones that I'm...
Is it Zombie Nightmare?
No, Jury Duty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Zombie Nightmare, another MST3K classic.
Jury Duty is a waste of 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to tell you if you just looked at it's Pauly Shore once everyone was burnt out on Pauly Shore.
Yep. Yep. But I think I remember you had watched it on Netflix when we still worked part-time jobs.
Yeah. And then I was just home and I was like, I'll just watch this. I want to watch a movie. And it's the first time I ever sat through a movie and I was like, I wasted all of that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're not talking about that movie. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch that movie. Nope. But so just doing the VHS opening. Coming to theaters, Woody Harrelson, Wesley Snipes, and Jennifer Lopez in a film called Money Train. Hmm. The lead villain in that is wife murderer Robert Blake.
Ah.
Coming soon to home video, a wonderfully silly film with the charming Barbarian brothers, Peter Paul and David Paul. Twin Sitters.
I love that movie.
Such a fun movie.
I love that movie.
It's not great.
No,
but
it's not good at all.
For those of you that know us, we even had a podcast about it. It doesn't have to be a great movie for us to enjoy it. It was endearing. It's charming. Yeah. And the Paul brothers, although they're two brutish knucklehead, like, beefcakes.
So much personality.
Like, they're so funny and charming. Next, Cary Tagawa in another film where a white woman's mom was mixed up with tough people in Thailand. Mm. And once she finds out, they're on her tail too, called Natural Causes.
Called All the Teas.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, The Secret of Roan Inish, which is a film based in Ireland.
Ah.
So, whatever.
Oh, who cares?
Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said earlier, it hits the ground running. Essentially, it's a film where this white, tall, muscular blonde-headed man played by Dolph Lundgren was raised in Japan, so we're led to think his parents were murdered at the age of 9 by the Yakuza.
So much of that would be like, oh, you should probably explain all of that. And it doesn't get explained.
Wikipedia, like, I'll read through the plot just to further understand what I watched to see if I missed anything. Because when watching this movie, I was texting you and like, they could have done this. Why didn't they do this?
Yeah.
This was thinly explained.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't make much sense. So I go through Wikipedia and be like, maybe I missed something.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
But I was like, I read through it and I was like, I feel like the person who wrote out this plot is just gathering what they feel like. Yeah. Because I was like, first of all, it's not, I don't really remember it being said in the movie he was raised in Japan. I know he was in Japan because his father was
said he grew up in Japan.
Yeah, he said he grew up
in
Japan.
His dad was an MP in the occupational forces, which they don't explain what that even is.
And also they don't explain why the Yakuza targeted his dad and his parents.
Later on, Yoshida, you know, Cary Tagawa's character, who's a great villain, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Super menacing. Mm-hmm. Towards the end, he's mentioning, like, you're so much like your father, you know, and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, your father thought that too, you know, stuff like that. I'm like, are you going to tell us anything on how they relate to each other?
Because they spend time doing these flashbacks to when Chris Kenner, Dolph Lundgren's character, is 9, witnessing his parents being killed.
Yeah.
Like, could you put in, and again, this, it's also to assume that maybe those bits were included in the original 100 minute cut or whatever.
There was more stuff with like with his boss, like with the typical like, Kenner, you can't keep doing this or whatever, you know, that
so
kind of
maybe
stuff.
They put in more exposition like that.
Yeah. And all he said was, I witnessed my parents be killed.
Yeah.
And he's the one that did it.
Yeah. Like the main 3 points are he lived in Japan, his father was a service worker in Japan or serviceman stationed in Japan, he was raised in Japan, and he has an affinity for, you know, the Japanese culture, as we see a lot more. It almost seems like culturally appropriating it.
Yeah,
almost.
Definitely at the end. Yeah. I think I had a note sent that he goes full cultural appropriation.
Yeah, it's like a kid here who definitely is an American is they want to believe they're Japanese because they're so obsessed with anime and manga.
Yeah.
Definitely went to high school with a few of those kids.
Yeah. But they explain why he's of him and Brandon Lee, who, you don't know, Brandon Lee is the son of Bruce Lee.
Yeah, he's actually half Chinese
and half Chinese.
American.
In this movie, he plays a half Japanese person.
Yeah.
Which also, I'm not familiar with, you know, Asian culture or anything. I think that's pretty culturally insensitive too.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, it's the 90s.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost indistinguishable.
Yeah.
It's like,
but
the difference is negligible to the American audience.
So that's the twist in the dynamic, is that the Asian character is full on Valley Boy, like grew up going to malls, watching MTV. He's like driving my dad's car. He's like, dad's a white guy who's a dentist.
Yeah.
He's like, my mom wanted me to get immersed in my Asian culture, and so I learned martial arts.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. And he was like unfamiliar with like stuff. Dolph Lundgren was bringing up like samurai stuff and Japanese culture. And I'm like, I understand, Johnny, you didn't immerse yourself in the culture, but like, growing up, you didn't retain... I'm sure your mom talked about Japanese culture.
Well, the thing is, you can make that work for those two characters. I mean, this is all in all, it's a buddy cop movie that has the, you know, by this time...
Wisecracks.
Yeah, by this time, Lethal Weapon has been out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's kind of the prototype for what would come.
That's the benchmark, prototype benchmark. Yeah.
There have been ones before that, but like Lethal Weapon was a prototype of what people were trying to go for.
Yeah.
So there's the wisecracking aspect. There's the fish out of water partner. There's the strange bedfellows aspect.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, you can still make that work, because to me, I sent you a very basic, like, kind of like a typical pitch to where Brandon Lee's the main character who, for this reason, is against his Japanese culture, and Dolph Lundgren's the fish out of water, mainly too because I think Dolph Lundgren plays a better supporting character.
Yeah.
But either way, if they're gonna go with that, if Johnny is supposed to be like against his Japanese culture, and Dolph Lundgren is supposed to be against his American culture, which is how Wikipedia lays it out.
Yeah.
Which that's one of the things where I feel like they were assuming, because not enough explanation was given, not enough expository thing, not enough anything was given to flesh out those two ideas as to why Johnny is against his Japanese heritage and why Chris Kenner is against his American heritage, which it goes to making these foreign actors seem like they have American heritage.
Yeah.
Dolph Lundgren, to make him seem like he's an American. It's the same thing in Bloodsport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Or The Quest.
Yeah.
Where
the Quest is a better example.
Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme plays an American representative, even though he's Belgian. They explain it in the movie as to why that is.
Essentially here,
James Remar gets hurt.
Yes, but essentially it's a little different because, they say he's an implant, but he represents America because of X, Y, and Z. Either way, not enough is done to explain why Kenner doesn't like this and why and why Johnny doesn't like this or why he has a lack of understanding. All he says is, my dad was half white and I grew up in the valley and, you know, I did
a white guy who's a dentist.
Yeah, and but it's just, it's one of those things, my dad is half white. My dad's all white. I mean, they have that conversation in the car and every now and then Dolph Lundgren is explaining Japanese heritage things, but not enough is given to that.
Right.
But essentially the movie is Chris Kenner, you know, he is this man of, you know, who fully embraces Japanese heritage because of apparently where he grew up.
Yeah. And when his parents were killed, they put him in a Japanese orphanage.
Well, the thing is, because later in the movie, this is the only other expository thing, is he's in the third act, the beginning of the third act, when they need to go rescue Tia Carrera. He's in front of his, you know, his Japanese altar, and he has these pictures like of him and his family, and then there's a picture of him as a child with other Japanese children standing in front of a sign that says Japanese American Orphanage. Mm-hmm. But I was like, why would they be that on the nose in Japan? Like, it would make more sense is he ended up in Little Tokyo in California, and there's a Japanese American orphanage there. Mm-hmm. It would just have been a Japanese orphanage if he was in Japan. Because, again, we're to assume that he grew up in Japan until he was like 18 and then he came to America and became a cop. Yeah. But like, I don't know. That was one of the things that threw me off. I was like, that's really on the nose.
Yeah.
Like, why would logically a place in Japan to Japanese American? But then again, there are still servicemen and women in Japan and especially since World War II. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's just,
I'm going to reiterate that they don't explain anything with his parents.
Right.
He's telling Brandon Lee, Johnny, because let me go over the synopsis first.
Yeah, go over the synopsis.
So basically, you get Dolph Lundgren, and then Brandon Lee is assigned to be his partner.
Mm-hmm.
He just says, like, Nelson sent me.
The Asian Crimes Division.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what Johnny.
They don't explain why they sent him to be his partner.
No.
He just needs a partner because the motivation for the movie does not factor into why he became his partner.
Mm-hmm.
It happens after the fact. He's like, what's your deal with trying to chase down like these Yakuza guys or whatever? And so
doing things after the fact can work.
Yeah.
But, you know, it causes the audience to be like, well, why this, why that? And then it's explained later,
say,
and
that's
like, fine.
You can't say, like, I don't need a partner. It's like, it's not what they're telling me. They said, this, and this, and that's why you need a partner, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which Brandon Lee, out of the gate, his charisma jumps off the screen.
Uh-huh.
He is just, he's wisecracking. His martial arts is smooth.
Mm-hmm.
He's charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
He's got, like, leading man, good
looks.
He was
going to be a star.
Without question.
Especially if he went from The Crow to Mortal Kombat, because there's talks of him being Johnny Cage.
Ooh, God, man.
Man, it would have been.
And which I think that was debunked.
Yeah, but still.
Still.
I mean, Lyndon Ashby was fantastic.
Amazing.
But Brandon Lee, even if he never like reached the heights of like, I mean, not many were going to reach the heights of a Sly or Arnold. Yeah. He's still, I think he would have been phenomenal.
I think he would have been John Wick. Like, I love Keanu's John Wick, but I could see Brandon Lee, that him stepping into that role.
Or, like, he would, like, Bourne Identity type movies.
Yeah.
Like, Brandon Lee.
He would
Lee,
have done romantic comedies.
He would have been a star.
Man.
He would have been a
man.
Star.
Yeah. And I've never seen Rapid Fire, but I'm very much looking forward to it.
I'm excited. I've heard nothing. Plus, it has great character actor Powers Booth.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Who, if you listen to our Sudden Death episode, the Jean-Claude Van Damme Die Hard quote-unquote knockoff, we raved about Powers Booth.
Very
he
good
was
villain.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
But Brandon Lee stole the show.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. So these two team up and we're introduced to Tagawa, who has just come in from Japan. He's a member, he's a leader of the Yakuza.
Yeah.
And it's just these Yakuza members who are infiltrating little Tokyo with this drug called ICE, which is basically, it's like meth on steroids, pretty much.
Yeah, it looks like crack rock, but yeah, it's more potent.
And... Yeah. So basically his goal is to, through the Red Dragon Brewing Company, basically distribute it all throughout the United States.
Yeah.
And he's got a bunch of gangs that we'll see later that he is like trying to recruit to run these drugs and stuff like that. He's basically trying to create a drug empire.
Yeah.
And Dolph Lundgren, he's got a connection to Yoshida. But Yoshida is the one that killed his parents, so that's his connection. He's out for revenge. And then they find out about this whole drug thing.
Yeah.
And so... And so that's Brandon, where Brandon Lee comes in. He's like, okay, I want to take this guy down for the crime he's committing.
Right.
And if in that process, you can like, let's go by the book and you can also exact your revenge, stuff like that. So they both have connection. He's like, cause at first he's like, why do you keep chasing this guy? He's like, listen, but you know, despite myself, I like you, you know, I like you a lot.
Yeah.
You need to tell me why you are hell-bent on taking this guy down. And that's where Dolph Lundgren explains, very shallow explains, doesn't give us much besides my dad was an MP in occupational forces in Japan. I was raised in Japan. And Yoshida killed him, but he never says why Yoshida. He never says, like, my dad got a drop on X, Y, and Z. Yeah. And
got in the crosshairs of the Yakuza.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, if for those of you listening and you don't know, the Yakuza is a Japanese crime syndicate. They're like the mafia.
Yeah. And of course, he needs a love interest. And that's where Tia Carrera comes in. She's a singer at the Banzai Club.
Yeah.
And
whose friend got mixed up with Yoshida's. And like Tanaka, who we see at the beginning of the movie, Dolph Lundgren infiltrates.
Kind of a blink and you miss it character.
Yeah.
You'll recognize him because he's in a couple scenes, but you're like, wait, who's Tanaka? Oh, that guy's Tanaka?
Yeah.
May take a few watches to be like, oh, that's Tanaka?
Yeah. Her friend Angel gave the drop to Tanaka that Yoshida is bad news. And Yoshida finds out after he throws a party. He's throwing a party celebrating him taking Tanaka's territory.
He's walking around, goes to the big oaf in his group, and he's like, I love this guy.
He's like a roadhouse. And Yoshida kills Angel.
Yeah.
And
films it.
And films it.
Yeah.
And Tia Carrera's character finds out about it.
Yeah. So then she's caught in the crosshairs, to use a term you just used.
Yeah.
And... basically, that's the story.
Yeah.
Like, and it's they're trying to take down this drug kingpin who's a member of the Yakuza.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of, it's pretty much, no exaggeration, every 5 minutes, it's some sort of car chase, shootout, fist fight, something.
Yep. All laced with nudity and swearing. And
yeah.
All the
very little exposition.
On. Yeah.
Just enough. Like, for me, it's just enough to be like, okay, let's keep this train moving.
Yeah.
I understand motivation for the most part.
Yeah.
I understand this and this. You said enough. Like, let's on to the next fight.
Yeah.
You
know? It's really tries to rely on the buddy cop aspect, the rat-tat-tat between the two of them.
There is a lot of smart-ass dialogue.
I think some of the lines are cheesy. You have the right to be dead.
Yeah. I made a note. I was like, okay, not even Brandon Lee can make that sound cool.
Like, the writing isn't great.
Yeah.
I think Dolph Lundgren's delivery of one-liners is...
It's very stilted.
It's stilted. He's very wooden and stiff.
It's very inconsistent, too, because at 1 minute he's delivering dialogue and he's like the measured, kind of wise, sage character. And then he'll just have an outburst or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like in the scene in the junkyard where they're getting crushed in the car. He's like, oh, this isn't good. Oh.
Yeah, tonally, it doesn't it kind of
yeah.
It tries to play the line. Like, it tries, it yeah. teeters on, you know, it trying to keep that, again, the buddy cop formula of you have the scenes of suspense, but then also, like, you have the wisecracking and, you know, you're trying to add some mm-hmm. levity. But tonally, it seems like it doesn't know what it wants to be.
Yeah.
But then also, it doesn't really give a whole lot of suspense.
No.
There's the classic scene to where they get captured and then they're being tortured.
Yeah.
So by this, you know, it's essentially they're hooked up to a car battery or something that electrocutes them.
Some sort of device.
Yeah. And Kerry Tagawa and Tia Carrera in the back of a car. And
Yoshida's like,
we need to watch this. You know, watch this as I kill, you know, your boyfriend and his pal.
Well, and that's where Dolph Lundgren. Because we gotta circle back as to why it's her boyfriend,
right?
To, you know how quickly relationships move in movies,
yeah.
But that's when I was referring to. He's like, you're just like your father,
right?
You know, he's just talking about like, just you. If only you could have gotten to know him better, but you didn't have the time. Yeah. You know, something like, how did you know his father?
But like, there's no suspense in that scene to where you have the characters being electrocuted half near to death.
Yeah.
And then they finally escape somehow. One of them, like Brandon Lee, maybe passes out.
Yeah.
And then Dolph Lundgren, like, has just enough strength.
Yeah.
It's just enough strength to like break out. And then he like wakes him up, races to throw him over his shoulder. And then the third act opens up with Brandon Lee trying to get his strength back or whatever. It's one of those things where that scene doesn't happen long enough of them getting electrocuted to where it makes you afraid for their safety or for their health. Like, it just literally after Yoshida and Tia Carrera are in the back of the car, literally like a minute after you see them in the back of the car, Dolph Lundgren breaks out of his restraint and punches Gerald Okada and then like...
Yeah.
Grabs, you know, and Brandon breaks Brandon Lee.
He's like, get me the fuck out of this thing.
Yeah, but like, it with it being such a quick movie, there's not enough time to feel anything. Yeah, not enough time to build that suspense where you care about the characters.
Yeah.
Like, they try and do that just with wisecracking, or they try and like make the audience feel like, oh, it's realistic that there's been no time spent between seeing the two of these characters off, you know, out of the line of duty, bonding with one another. It's just automatically 25 minutes into the movie after they first met, Brandon Lee and Dolph Lundgren first met, because Dolph Lundgren was in a Japanese establishment in Little Tokyo, and the Yakuza showed up wanting like tribute from the owner, because there's a new sheriff in town. It's Yoshida or whatever.
Yeah.
And Dolph Lundgren, and then Brett's when Brandon Lee shows up. Again, just 10 minutes into the movie. And then, like, no time is spent showing them bonding. And then 25 minutes in, after they just were at each other's throats most of the time we see them, that's when you mentioned Brandon Lee's like, you know, despite my better judgment, I like you, Kenner.
Yeah, it's like, I was like, you literally in the same day was saying like, I can't stand you, you know, stuff like that. Which, now that I'm realizing, it's a fun movie. I like it.
Yeah, it
moves
fine.
Quick, but you're right. It doesn't give you enough time to feel anything. And realizing that, like, oh, I like these characters because I know that these actors are good people.
Yeah.
And I like Brandon Lee.
Yeah. I'm not trying to get out that we're asking very much from a movie that that's just mainly violence, martial arts, gunplay.
It's a
B-action
movie, which is my favorite genre of movie.
But there are things that I don't think is too much to ask
from a storytelling perspective,
exactly.
Character development perspective. Don't even have to get super three-dimensional.
Yeah, exactly.
But establish some things.
Just a little more exposition. Maybe five more minutes. Maybe make it an 84-minute long movie if you're going to make it just such a breakneck speed, because it's missing things that kind of makes the story work. And I understand, again, what they're trying to sell it off of. Dolph Lundgren, who still, even in, you know, as they were seeing, he's not a huge box office draw. He's still a mountain. Brandon Lee, who he's the son of Bruce Lee, but he's also a star on the rise. You have nudity. Kerry Tagawa is a great character
actor.
It's violent. I mean, swordplay. It's just, again, the story, the you know, the character, you know, the idea of Dolph Lundgren being the one who embraces Japanese culture, and Brandon Lee, who is, you know, in real life half Chinese, but in the movies half Japan. Like, you can make all that work, but like we said earlier, not enough was fleshed out with these characters in order for it to make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said I would circle back as to, we got it. Tia Carrera still plays a role in this movie.
Yeah.
She's a singer at the Banzai Club, which I actually made note also of, like, in my notes, I put like action scene and then the location and maybe little notes of in the action scene. But Yoshida is bothering her at the Banzai Club, and he's got all this stroke and all this power and stuff. And he's basically, he wants to make her his.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, you're so beautiful. And do you offer any other services? And she's like, I just sing and stuff. Then it cuts to a rape scene.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't show it. They don't show any of it.
Yeah.
But you know, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And basically then on a hill overlooking, that overlooks and gives us a vision of Yoshida's mansion is Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee, and they have binoculars, and he's like, oh, it's that girl from the club. He's like, what's she doing? It's like, she's laying out a bunch of stuff. Someone left a big knife in there. And Dolph Lundgren's like, give me those binoculars. And he's like, she's about to perform seppuku, and it's like a ritual suicide. It's like, it's rare in women. It's really only if they've been dishonored, so like irreparably.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes to save her
and
then brings her back to his place. And then they, it's not safe at his loft. And so they, he built this traditional Japanese house somewhere in LA.
That's
it's his sanctuary. It's his escape.
That's one of that's where I was like, all right, it's laid on pretty thick here.
That we get it. He likes Japan.
Yeah. We get it. All right. Yeah.
And so basically it's through that she realizes she's appreciative of his efforts to save her life and stuff.
Yeah.
And they become an item. Really, they have sex together and stuff. There is. This movie is known for one particular line.
Yeah.
It's completely absurd.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really known, is because it comes completely out of left field.
Right.
Is they're in the house, and the Yakuza, like Yoshida's group, is about to, you know, invade the house. And
this is before they're captured and hooked up to the electricity or whatever.
And so Kenner, Dolph Lundgren, hears that, and he gets up, and Brandon Lee, Johnny, has already been like, there's more, we don't have enough bullets, like, for all them and stuff like that. And so basically, Dolph Lundgren is like, that's fine, and he opens this cabinet. He's got just a traditional Japanese web, like size and ninja stars and stuff like that. And he's like, they're about ready for the attack.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Lee, because he comes out and he's like, where's Minoku or Tia Carrera?
Yeah.
He's like, we slept together. She's in my room. He's like, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, he's like, of course you did.
Yeah, and he's talking about how, and prior he has like a jacuzzi or whatever on his property. He's in the jacuzzi, and Tia Carrera joins him, and they're both naked. It's a body
naked
double.
With a wig, it looked like.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, I saw you derobing to get in that jacuzzi or whatever, and like they're talking or whatever. He's like, by the way, if we don't make it out of this, you've got the biggest dick I've ever seen on a man. And he's like, thanks.
He's like, thanks. Don't know what to say. And he's like, how about don't die? And he's like, all right, don't die.
But that's the most famous line from this movie.
Yeah.
You've got the biggest dick I've ever seen on a man.
It's like, it's
like, and people use that as proof of like, oh, Johnny is a homosexual character. And if they come out and say that was the intention, be like, okay, bravo, openly gay character.
Yeah.
But there's nothing else to really suggest that,
especially
honestly.
Since earlier in the Banzai Club, and I'm not saying this couldn't mean he isn't gay or bisexual, but
he could have just been posturing.
Yeah.
He was with this macho partner or whatever.
But in the Banzai Club, you know, one of the things is there, it's Japanese businessman eating sushi off of naked women.
He is very into the women there.
Yeah, he's very into the women, very into the idea of eating sushi off naked women. He's like, I think I could get used to this Japanese culture, stuff like that.
He's like, we're gonna go nab this guy, and then we're going to go eat sushi off those naked women. You yeah. know, stuff like
so,
that.
And again, not that he still couldn't be gay or bisexual, but it's just one of those things where, like, I think that part.
They took the one line, they're like, I think he's gay. Because he's like, listen, I like you. Despite myself, I like you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, this. Yeah. Or like, he appears disappointed yeah. when he says she spent the night in my bed or whatever. It's like, but there's nothing to really suggest that he's gay.
Nothing substantiates it yeah. except that one out of left field line. Again, if there was some character development, more scene, maybe if they did try and go for that, but I think it's just speculating.
Sometimes bros say that shit to yeah. each other. Yeah. Like frat bro kind of attitude. Sometimes they say that shit to each other. Mm-hmm. Could just be a bro being a bro.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is when you say Shodan in Little Tokyo, that line.
There are a lot of people.
You got the biggest dick I've ever seen on a man.
If they're familiar with the movie, that's what they're familiar with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, and then I think, I mean, there's not much more we can say about it.
There's a fight in a bathhouse.
There's a fight in a bathhouse.
There's a fight at the Banzai Club.
Yeah, that's the thing is it's a lot of fight. It's fighting and it's one-liners thrown in with the fighting. Mm. You had mentioned Johnny tries to go by the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chris Kenner, Dolph Lundgren, tries, but then when they meet Yoshida at the Banzai Club, he sees that Yoshida has the Iron Claw tattoo, the Yakuza one, and then he recognizes it, remembers, and then pulls a gun on him, and that's when the two of them, like, that's when he realizes now it's a revenge mission instead of just trying to pop this guy for
drug distribution.
Like so the end of the movie, like, they have Tia Carrera again, mm-hmm. like, the Iron Claw, Yakuza, Yoshida, all of them have Tia Carrera again, and they try and
use a brewery as a front.
Yeah,
because he's like, now we have our own trucks, and so we can distribute all this stuff.
Yeah,
and so there's a fight in the brewery just right after. So what were you gonna say?
Well, even before that, like, Dolph Lundgren puts on this traditional Japanese warrior garb.
He has a montage of that.
It goes full cultural appropriation.
The thing that made me laugh was he still, for most of that final confrontation, the final showdown,
he used a gun the entire time. It would make sense maybe if he just used traditional Japanese weapons and his martial arts, but he still used a gun the whole time, except in the final fight with Yoshida at that random
sword fight.
Yeah, with that random Japanese parade, which they both took swords out of, you know, guys on horses. And I thought it'd be funny if they'd be like, guys, these are props.
Decorative.
Swords.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, when he kills Yoshida and whatever, that final confrontation, which I think a little more should have been given, like, because it's just a random parade in Little Tokyo.
Yeah.
I think maybe during the course of the movie, Brandon Lee sees advertisements for the parade and Dolph Lundgren explains to him what it is, and then that somehow could be some sign of honor.
Yeah, at the beginning in that Japanese shop, the lady that runs the shop, when Yoshida's group comes in, they're like, we demand payment, you know, ever since. She's like, well, I already donate to the light parade or whatever, you know, so... But it's literally if you're not paying attention.
At this point, we're over an hour after that scene and nothing else has been said about it. But it's just so hilarious to me. Just they've already laid it on thick near the end with him, you know, essentially being a Japanese by proxy. They've already laid it on so thick, and then they have him putting on a Japanese robe or I don't know if it's a gi, but like putting on a headband, and it looks so silly.
Yeah.
But again, they could make up for it if he just uses Japanese methods.
Yeah.
Or like Japanese warrior methods.
He's like, no, I'm a samurai.
Yes. But he still is using an assault rifle the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the only time he doesn't is when he's in the final sword fight with Yoshida.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's littered with one-liners or attempt at one-liners, back and forth, all that stuff. Like I said, fight in a bathhouse. There's a fight at the Banzai Club. There's a fight at the Red Dragon Brewery, a fight at the junkyard.
Yeah.
You know, there's shoot 'em ups all over the place.
Oh yeah. It's some of the most egregious examples of just literally the shot is set up to where there's no way they can dodge that gunfire.
I was going to say, this is the prime example of standing in the line of fire and never getting hit.
Exactly. It happens countless times during the movie. One of the biggest and most glaring is at the beginning, after the Yakuza is leaving, after Johnny and Kenner like start fighting one another before they both know they're on the police force.
Yeah.
And Kenner has Johnny in a headlock, and they both are looking like they both see out in front of the the restaurant that they're in. They see the Yakuza are about to start shooting at them, and they both get wide-eyed. And the Yakuza starts shooting, and I'm like, there's, like...
They would have been lit up.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, Chris hides behind a wooden table. And for those of you... Kenner.
Yeah.
And for those of you that may not know us, listen, there's a lot of forgiveness that we give these movies that lack in logic.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe like laughably so at the amount of forgiveness that we give a lot of these movies, but
you can still call it out.
We can still call it out. And this has some of the, again, the most glaring examples of like people not getting hit when like there's no way they would have dodged that. Mm-hmm. And Yoshida's mansion, when Dolph Lundgren is going up to go get Tia Carrera and there's like 9 gunmen in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, He would have been hit before he even entered the ground.
And I love that kind of one-man army stuff in these kinds of movies.
Oh, absolutely.
But there was one shot, ironically enough, no one shot. He picks her up. He's got her in his arms, and one of the henchmen comes in with gun drawn and is just standing there, doesn't shoot.
Yeah.
The Dolph Lundgren and Tia Carrera, like, he's holding her, and he, like, jumps. He goes out the window, goes on top of the roof, and the guy chases him with the gun. Doesn't shoot him.
Uh-huh.
And Dolph Lundgren turns around and shoots the guy. I was like, that's your fault.
Yeah.
You had him prone, too. Mm-hmm.
It's just goofy. It's one of those things where, like, you got to know what you're watching and just accept it so that you're just not, like, you know. We've watched movies like this with people to where they're like, that it's like,
just watch
it. Just know what you're watching.
Yeah.
You have to turn your brain off for a lot of things. And I know, we're coming to a close here on our first entry in this year's Martial Arts Month. Mm-hmm. And I this whole time, it kind of makes it seem like we're, you know, contradicting ourselves by saying, you just got to turn your brain off. And then we're turning around saying all this. But listen, this is all under the pretense that we know what we're watching. We're still pointing those things out. However, at the end of the day, when the movie's over, we're like, we shrug. We're like, no, it was fun. It was fine.
I had fun.
Yeah.
It's you watch it almost in a tongue-in-cheek, sarcastic way.
Yeah, you laugh those things off.
Yeah, but overall, it's quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. I'm a massive Brandon Lee fan.
That's one of the what ifs that really breaks my heart.
Yeah. So, this movie, obviously, when it came, it became a cult classic. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until after Brandon Lee's death,
right?
Really, because like something like this or Rapid Fire, no one thought anything of. But after he died, it made people want to go back to some of his older movies.
They realized just how big of a star he would have been.
Yeah.
But all in all, I liked it better the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
Like a few years ago. This time around, it was okay. Like it's fine. It's one of those things that if somebody wanted, they're like, you guys are talking about it. Like, can you want to come over and watch it? I'd be like, sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's
give it a shot. Give it a try. It's 79 minutes long.
Yeah. You know, if you're fine with violence and boobies and all that, like, you know, go ahead and give it a try. Again, it's on Amazon Prime.
Only for Brandon Lee's performance.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you all for joining us
once
again on the Radcast. We can never thank you all enough. We're excited for the rest of Martial Arts Month.
Mm-hmm.
Stick with us on that. Hopefully, if you watch, I almost said Rapid Fire. If you watch Shonen Little Tokyo, hopefully you like it. If you don't, whatever, don't blame us.
I don't dislike it.
No, I don't dislike it. It's the epitome of fine.
Yeah.
Just, it's fine.
Yeah.
But thank you all for joining us, and until the next time,
be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you can be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.